everybody, and welcome to a very special episode of the Backwater Entrepreneur Podcast and Show, the podcast that guides your business from the backwaters to the global marketplace. I'm Jack, I'm your host, and in this very special episode, I'm bringing on a guest. My guest is Danny Creed, an international business coach, and we're going to discuss entrepreneurship, productivity, and a lot of great stuff that we have in store for you. It's a longer episode, so it's not going to be numbered. So we're still going to have episode 1, 2, 3, 4 when I'm alone, but we're going to have special episodes when we have a guest. And, you know, enjoy the episode and let me know what you think. First of all, welcome everybody back to the Backwater Entrepreneur Podcast. And today we have a very special episode. We have a guest. So I told everybody that it's going to be sometimes me and sometimes with a guest. And I'm very happy to announce that my first guest on the on this podcast and YouTube show is a world-renowned business coach, Danny Creed, which I had a pleasure to meet on a INAT summit in Belgrade a couple of weeks ago. Danny has over, and you will correct me, Danny, you have over 14,000 hours of coaching time. You're a serial entrepreneur, and you have 14 startups with that. So with that, I wish you a big welcome on the show, and and just introduce yourself.
I just found out we have video. I might explain why I don't have any hair is that I've done 14 startups. it's been a good life, though. Thank you for having me, Jack.
That's not a problem, and we're very glad to have you. So can you tell me, this podcast is basically about entrepreneurship, about people going from freelancers to entrepreneurs to placing their business on the global marketplace. And you're a business coach. So first of all, you have 14 startups under your belt. How did you go from entrepreneurship to business coaching?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I don't get asked that a lot, but the main reason I did that is that coaching, business coaching, was a natural progression. Of the 14 startups, I've also done over 400 turnaround projects. And I call them projects because anytime you go into work to turn a business around to be resold or kickstarted again or whatever is just as much of a challenge, and you lose just as many hairs as you do as if you're taking the chance and the risks of doing a startup. But I really enjoyed the creativity and really the success that you can have with a startup, because you can really change lives, you know. And startups go a couple of different ways. One can be you take the business and grow it out for a period of time, or other times you sell the idea. But either way, I had a lot of experience on both success and failure. And the problem with the coaching industry, and any of your viewers or listeners out there, I would always caution, and it might be another show that you and I do, but I always caution you on, before you hire a coach of any kind, be sure you ask them some questions, find out their qualifications, because in the business coaching world, very few people who call them coaches actually have ever owned a business, mm-hmm. It's like kind of having open heart surgery. I want a surgeon that's done it a couple of times rather than this is his first and he has YouTube out. So it's a natural progression for me to take the experience and knowledge and the successes, knowledges of success and the knowledge of failure, and go out and share that with others. And it's been I've been doing that for about 12 years now.
I just, before this recording started, I just listened to a podcast that you did recently, and you said a great thing. So, and I want just to ask you a question, how much of it is it true? So you said, I'm not a life coach, I'm a business coach, I'm not a happiness coach. So does that mean that business and entrepreneurship comes with a little bit less happiness?
No, not less happiness, but I know you and I have talked real briefly about this. it comes with, well, life comes with a lot of stress, and you add in starting a business. And the problem is that most people who start a business or think they're an entrepreneur have no idea what the meaning of entrepreneur is. You know, I joke half-heartedly, but I joke that, you know, most people who call themselves an entrepreneur can't even spell the word,
yep.
You know, and but you many people jump into it and they're not prepared. And that is why it's estimated that 90% of all businesses started today will be broke in 2 years or less.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's just mind boggling. But when you look at it, I can believe that because, again, people aren't prepared. They're starting a business of something that they love doing, but they don't know a thing about sales or pricing or marketing, you mm-hmm. know, and so there is always a little more pain that comes with starting a business just because of all the issues people finally realize that they have to face, you know. When I said that statement, you know, I said I'm a business coach. There are really excellent life coaches out there, but they deal with the personal issues. They deal with helping you make better decisions from a personal standpoint. As a business coach, I'm an expert. I hope to be an expert at helping you and helping people understand what it takes, the sacrifices that have to be made, and the rewards they get for putting in the time and effort. You know, there was a philosopher once said, you know, if 40 hours a week is for, you know, if you want to work in corporate and get a paycheck.
Yep.
Anything over 40 is if you want to be an entrepreneur. Because when you go into it, you've got to expect to spend 60 hours or more.
Exactly, exactly. So being a freelancer, being an entrepreneur requires a lot of sacrifice. Now, being a business coach, I want to ask you, so what is the number one mistake that entrepreneurs make? Is it not knowing the sacrifices that need to be done? Or is it something
well,
else?
That's part of it. But there are really three major things that they get in trouble with. And that is they always underestimate the amount of time, effort, and money it's going to take to start their business. Time, effort, money. So they always underestimate that. I've actually talked to people that were struggling or failed in a startup, and I said, how much time during the week did you spend with your business? They said, oh, you know, I read a book where I could only spend 20 hours a week and be successful. I go, sorry, I don't want to hear any more whining. Leave, please. You know,
somebody read a book by Tim Ferriss, 4 hours, 4 hour work week.
Yeah, I mean, that's just, I don't know what world they're living in, but, you know, it's like to do anything in life, well, you've got to spend some time at it, right? You know, so time, effort, and money. People always, I work a lot in helping clients raise money for startups and additional bridge funding and things like that. And, you know, and I know a lot of angel investors, and if you came in and said you needed $500,000, they'd offer you $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
And not because they're trying to get more of your company, because they know most people will blow through that than come and ask them for more at some point. They'd rather give you the more, but make you plan it out,
mm-hmm.
make you understand how the use of proceeds is, you know? So people always underestimate time, effort, and the amount of money taken. So those three things will sink you if you don't take the time to do it. That's why I say many of my startups, you know, Jack, I've written a full business plan.
Yep.
And many times the only person that's seen that business plan is me. But the power of writing a business plan for any entrepreneur out there listening, the power of writing a business plan is in forcing yourself to ask yourself the hard questions.
And can you tell me, so basically you said time, effort, and money. Is the money kind of the third most important thing? Are there any entrepreneurial kind of adventures where there is money is kind of a less you know, lesser value, apart from time and effort and the work put in?
Yeah, another great question. Yes, it is because some people have great ideas and they're willing to work hard, but they don't have any money. And so they have to do things like there's a concept of marketing called guerrilla marketing, which is high value, low cost or no cost. Mm-hmm. I've used that technique for years and taught it. You know, so when you're starting, many times a bootstrap startup, if you're familiar with that term, a bootstrap startup is where literally I asked there was a group of entrepreneurs one day and I was prodding them and pushing them a little bit. And I said, how do you define entrepreneur? And the guy says, well, first you go out and raise $10 million. And I go, no, you know, an entrepreneur is a guy with a table in a garage, you know, or a basement with a telephone and hopefully a computer if you have one. And I mean, the first startup that I was ever a part of, we didn't have enough money to go to a prospect to close them. So we had to do all of our closing on deals over the telephone and ask for half the money up front so we could afford to fly to go visit the client. I mean, so you've got to be very creative. If you believe in your idea well enough and you're willing to work at it, before you can ever raise the money, unless you already have a great aunt that gave you some money, before you can raise the money today, people are going to want to know how much of your own money do you have in it? How much effort do you put in it every day, every week? They're going to want to know what you have in it before they'll give you any of their money.
Exactly.
So if you go out to ask for $1 million or $10 million or $20 million or $500,000, there's more money out there in the world than ever before for investment. The problem is people are getting much, much more careful who they invest in and how.
Yeah.
Okay. So the first question they're going to want, no more will they say, man, that's a great idea. Here's $1 million. They're going to say, that's a great idea. What have you done with it so far? How much money is it generating so far? How much of your own money and time do you have into it? And on and on and on. Then they see that you've got a commitment to it. Then you can get money today. But you've got to be able to monetize it somehow, some way, whether you have money or not.
Exactly. So I wanted just to strive on that and say that being in a digital world nowadays, it's more easy than ever to start your own business. So you don't have to have, you know, millions of dollars in capital before you even launch an idea or monetize it and ever hope for an investment. So that's not something that should stop people from going in and testing their idea, testing the MVP, testing the if somebody will buy it, if it's a good idea or anything like that. So going further, so is mindset then the biggest factor in being an entrepreneur?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and I usually do an exercise with clients or groups that I work with, and it's based on the research that the Carnegie Institute did on what are the traits of a successful entrepreneur and anybody successful. And they broke it down that there were, of all the traits you could list, and what I usually do is stand in front of people and we list one word traits. And we've listed as many as 85 to 90 in a session. Well, the Carnegie Institute broke it down that there's really three categories that fall out of that. The first is attitude. The second is skills, and the third is knowledge. So once we have this big long list, then I ask people to go in and I say, okay, let's attach an attitude, skill, or knowledge to each one of these words. And I will tell you, every time I've ever done this, Jack, every time 85% of those words represent attitude. 85%.
Amazing.
American car maker Henry Ford once was famous for saying, if you think you can or you can't, you're right.
Yeah.
You have to, as an entrepreneur, consciously say, I'm going to do anything and everything necessary to be successful. Number one. The second thing that gets in the way that you have to consciously be aware of is that if you're not willing to change your thoughts, your idea, your project, if you're not willing to change along the way, then don't do it.
Yep.
You know, but attitude is the main thing. You've got to consciously accept the fact that I'm going to have to work harder than anybody else, that I'm going to have to commit to certain things. My new book that I'm working on right now, that I was on late last night, is called, right now the working title is Managing the Grind, because I believe every successful business person and entrepreneur today, male or female, wherever you're at in the world, must understand their grind, and their grind being, what do I have to do every day, no matter what, whether I want to or not? What do I have to do every day to be successful and keep driving towards success in my goals? And you have to list those. Once I listed them, I had like 20 things that I do every day, no matter what. I do a daily planner every night. I get up and exercise. I do this and this and this. I read. I do these things. And the thing is, with an entrepreneur, they don't understand what their grind is. They get in a little trouble and they start moaning and groaning and whining and blaming, and, you know, the government is holding me back and the taxes are too high. Well, that's baloney. You know, you've heard the line, is the glass half full or half empty, right? Well, I've kind of changed that in that people, there's two mindsets that people have. One is a survival mindset, and the other is what I call a thriving mindset. Mm-hmm. Now, most people, believe it or not, well, if you think about it, live in a survival mindset. They live in a mindset of, well, I just hope to make it through the day. You know, I had a guy tell me when I was researching my first book, he said, yeah, you know, when I go to work, it's pretty strong goals I have. My goal is to go to work and break even.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just can't even imagine that, you know. But so you can have a survival mindset or thriving mindset. Is glass half full, half empty? Well, the thriving mindset now says, yeah, it's neither, because I can refill it.
Yeah.
I have the capability of refilling the glass, so it's not either. You know, and that's the mentality that an entrepreneur has to have. If you have any doubts in your product, people are going to see it. They can smell it. If you have any question of if you need to work extra to get something done to move it forward, then you shouldn't do it. It's all about, you have to have, no matter what. It's like, you know, the famous Thomas Edison story of how many tries it took to make the light bulb. I just heard Dyson out of UK, the vacuum cleaner mm-hmm. guy. He said he had 5,000 prototypes before he found the one that worked. Now, is that a winning, thriving mindset, or is that a surviving mindset?
That's a persistence.
which comes along with a mindset of success. Nothing is going to get my way. And if you have anything less than that, don't even sacrifice the risk of losing your life, your family, your yeah. world. I mean, you've got to understand that's part of the deal. And if I may, just quickly, there's so many people out there that get into entrepreneurship, and then they come to me and they say, Dan, you know, I can't figure out work-life separation. You know, I'm just spending so much. I've got to figure this out. Well, my message to you is that's not what you worry about. Here's what you should be worrying about. Taking work and life and meshing them so that you know exactly you're okay with the time you spend with work. You're okay with the time you spend with life. You've got to have a compromise there. You got to bring them together rather than separate them. Because if you want to be an entrepreneur, it's going to take a lot of that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think most people are kind of have difficulties in having support on the other side. I'm lucky being an entrepreneur. I have support both from close family and wide family in that, but I know how hard it is. I know that we work constantly. We work basically, you know, wake, work, and go to sleep with your work, yeah. and while you're yeah. with the kids, and while you're on the weekends, and while everything, yeah. and the question arises: do you have the luxury of spending some time for yourself without having yes. Feeling guilty about not working? My belief in the past couple of months is that we all should, and that goes into building yourself up for work. So as you said, so you get up, you go to exercise, you don't feel guilty about that because it gets you in the ability to work for the rest of the day or for the rest of the week. You know, you take care of yourself, your family, and they care, you know, your body takes care of your work time and so on.
Yeah, well, here's a little tip for that, just for, again, your listeners, in that the best way to do something like that is to plan for it. Mm-hmm. You should be, I'm a big time management freak. I it's really important to me of prioritizing everything you need to do, then managing the time around it. And so I would, to your point there, I always say, look, plan for it. You know, plan for your time off. I plan for my time off to go to a movie or go for a hike or something. I just put it in my time plan because it's a high priority thing that I have to get up and go do this. At every Tuesday night, I go play music someplace. You know, on Friday afternoon, this afternoon through Sunday, there's a whole process that says most people will go out and do things to relax their physical body. But very few people do things, particularly executives and startups and entrepreneurs, do anything to relax their minds.
Yeah.
So my friend and pretty famous, one of the top in history, business and personal development people, Brian Tracy, taught me that. He worked with Harvard University, and they found that you needed about 34 hours, straight hours of relaxing the brain. So I planned that every Friday afternoon about 4 o'clock, I shut off everything. I only check phone for if it's a client.
And that's not including sleep, right?
Not including sleep. Yeah. You know, but I only check the phone if it's family or a client mm-hmm. calling. And other than that, I don't check email until Sunday afternoon at a very specific time. Then I check my email, then I check any voicemails, and I do all that. But you have to have that time off. You have to go for walks, have a time to go read a book. Every night before I go to bed, part of my grind, because I love it, but sometimes I don't want to do it, is I sit down and read for at least 30 minutes every night.
And that's very important. So we need to build ourselves up for, you know, constantly. And it's not about, you know, I finish school and then I know everything. So in today's world, we constantly need to learn. So we went through mindset and we came to a point where we said that mindset is very important, but to be a successful entrepreneur, you have to organize your life because, you know, your work is your life and with everything else, with the family and everything else. Can people learn to be organized if they're not?
Absolutely. And I believe I'll take it even a step farther, Jack, and tell you that I believe it to be a skill. Mm-hmm. And all skills are learned. If you talk about mindset, if somebody sits back and goes, well, I'm just sloppy, or, you know, I'm just disorganized no matter what. Well, what is that, a mindset? Yeah, it's a mindset. You're telling yourself, you're giving yourself a cheap excuse to not go get in shape, not go exercise, to not think properly, to not have to think. That's lazy thinking. You know, to say, oh, I can't learn that. You know, I'm better working with my desk stacked up high. I mean, you know, it is a discipline. And I was very honored at the summit that you attended, my priority management course that I believe in. And that is a skill that I teach, and I teach it to, you know, I teach it to executives of billion-dollar companies. I teach it to startup guys. But it's something that I've gone as far as believing that if you apply a process of prioritizing and managing time, that you can double your productivity in 24 hours if you use it.
Now, is being organized the same as being productive?
No. Okay, so you can either be productive, and I'll shift that a little bit. You can either be productive or you can be busy.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. So being productive means that you have a level of organization for you, that you have that to help you. Because organization to me, for instance, on daily tasks, organization is in 1928, one of the greatest books ever written about business and personal development was Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. Mm-hmm. It's the Bible. I've read it 30 times. It's the Bible of business. Some of it's very dry and terrible, hard to read, but it's just a business classic. And you can tell, I've had people say, so what's it about? I go, listen to the name, Think and Grow Rich. But it talks in there all the way back then about planning your next day the night before. And the reason you do that is I can list you about 10 different terms for it, but everyone from the, you know, Schopenhauer to great philosophers to business development people call it the universal mind, the law of attraction, whatever you want to call it. But the clearer that you can ever become on what is important for you to do the next day, even issues that you're going to take care of, your mind will work on it all night. You ever had a great idea in the shower in the morning?
Yep.
Well, that's because you probably were thinking about it when you went to bed. So back to your organization, if you're organized enough to force yourself to certain disciplines, for me, one of those disciplines is a daily planner I do every night before I go to bed, no matter what. Here it is. I've done it every night for 40 years. I saved these and put them in a pile over here. But I know exactly who I'm going to see and what time I'm going to see them and what I need to do in between those calls. You know, and that's an organization. Now, by being organized, I can then sit down and say, what is the, of all the things I think I need to do tomorrow, which has the highest priority? A priority being consequence. So in today's world, being organized is saying, do I need to do this? Is that productive? Or is that just being busy? Because again, my philosophy for any entrepreneur is we get into this mindset and we have to do everything. And the fact is, there was a German philosopher who said, never allow the most important things in life to be at the mercy of the least important things. And he said that in 1780. So this isn't a new concept, but it's not taught.
Yeah, you know. I just want to go back one step before. So we're going into some of the tools to make you more productive, which are lists and doing the most important thing first. Now, we in entrepreneurship, we often, and especially in startups, we often hear people being a one-man show. And people often start being a one-man show. So, and you just said it's not realistic to do everything yourself. So
that's right.
Where can people, you know, what is the advice for people that need to be a one-man show in the beginning?
Wow, that's great. Well, again, it's even more important to be doing only the most important things. Okay, so we'll start with that. Again, that's where a priority management system helps. Because again, if you set, I see a lot of one, and I've done it myself. You see a lot of one man, quote unquote, one man shows, you sit there and go, oh boy, I've got 87 things I need to do today. Well, if you really prioritize it, you probably have three things you need to do. You know, what's the highest consequence if you don't do it? So that's the first thing. Master prioritization. You've got to do it. Otherwise, you're going to be, I had a startup guy in California once that I work with, and he was starting up a gym, an exercise gym, to get in National Hockey League players in shape. And he was literally working 20 hours a day, 7 days a week. And by the time I got to the guy and was working with him, I said, make a list of everything you do in a day that you think you need to do. And one of those things was he was driving across Los Angeles 2 hours, three times a week, to go pick up vitamins at a warehouse to take back and sell in his gym. Now, let me ask you this. For a guy that's pretty much a single guy running this business, does he need to be spending 12 hours a week driving to go pick up vitamins? Is that the highest consequence thing he could possibly be doing in those 12 hours? No. You could get a courier, we found. You could get a courier to do it for $8 an hour. So he was wasting 12 hours of productivity that he could spend on more highly important things that only he can do. See, that's the key. So understand clearly what the most important things only you can do. Cutting deals, selling some things, okay? So the second thing then is in today's world, if you need some help on stuff, boy, there's some cool services that virtual assistants offer, and you can get them for really cheap, high-quality help, fairly cheap, and you don't pay benefits and anything else. Get you a virtual assistant. Find one of the things I've done over time is that I'll find people that are independent and they can help me out, but they don't have to be an employee. I hired a lady a couple of years ago that does all my social media marketing. Well, I'm good at it, but it's not really something I ought to be spending, you know, 10 hours a week at.
Yeah. So outsource.
Understand what you can hear. The key is, Jack, is that what can you get someone else to do? What can you delegate to someone that doesn't have to be an employee? And then if you're doing only the most important thing, then your business is going to thrive. Then you can afford to bring on the people when you need it. But have a plan. Put that in your business plan.
Yeah. So basically, the key point is that, and you and I talked about this when it was my question on the summit. So basically, for people who are just starting up, yes, you need to do everything, but you need to have a plan that when you grow and when you know that the most important thing that you do is actually making money, however it is. So, but whether making calls or going on meetings or doing the work yourself, so basically you can plan to outsource everything you don't need to do to assistants, to your employees, future, whatever it is. And basically that's the way to delegate things so you can be there for the most important thing. You also mentioned, I remember that from the summit, so having that kind of a mindset that you want to have in the mind what is not what is your current salary, but what do you want to work for, and that to behave like that, right?
Yeah, you know, one of the things that most entrepreneurs don't understand is the value of their time. Okay, and that isn't based on what you're making right now, because most of us weren't making anything. You know, we took a dive, we had some money saved or something. You know, so you have to, the key to, I do a very high level goal setting process that I work with all my clients on, not everybody, because it's just a whole, it's a raised mindset approach. But one of the things that I ask people to do, as I did in the summit, is I said, look, what is your goal for income? Is it 50,000? Is it 500,000? But any goal setting book I've ever read, the one thing they all agree on is that you've got to write goals as if you've already achieved them. Okay. So let's say your goal is $100,000. Okay. If your goal is $100,000, you've got to think every day that I am earning $100,000. I have earned $100,000. So if you do that, if you say $100,000 in the U.S., We have an organization called the Bureau of Labor Statistics. It's just somebody that tracks the workforce.
Yep.
Okay. So they say that the average person will work a 2,000-hour year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you take that 2,000 hours and divide it into whatever your goal is. So that would make, if you had a $100,000 goal, that would make your hourly value 24 hours a day, make it at $50 an hour. Okay. So with that, you have to ask yourself as you get ready to do something, is this a $50 an hour job for me, or is it an $8, $10 an hour job?
Yep.
That's one of the best ways to evaluate if you should be doing it or not. The second evaluation is just asking yourself, am I the only one that can be doing this? You know, but you've got to say if your goal is 200,000, you don't have to tell anybody. But I hope your goal is 200,000 or more. If it was 200,000, you're worth $100 an hour, 24 hours a day. So before you do something, ask yourself, is this a $100 an hour task, or should I spend $10 and have somebody, a courier, go do it?
Yeah, just don't do that when you're talking to the family and the wife.
That's right. So- and you mentioned something. Yeah, yeah. And you mentioned something earlier that I want to comment on really quickly. You know, I was taught, I've had some really good mentors when it comes to startups and things like this. And one of the great ones told me once, he said, look, there, if you really want to simplify it, there's really only two purposes and two strategies for any business, any startup, even establishment. That's it. Only two. Not all these hundreds and hundreds of strategies and tactics. There's only two. And the purpose of a business, the first is create value. The second is generate revenue. If you're not creating value or generating revenue, don't do it.
Yeah.
I mean, you can hire somebody else to go get the mail. I knew an entrepreneur one time that was spending 2 hours a day just driving to a mail post office, getting through traffic, getting the mail and coming back. It's ridiculous. It's 2 hours. That's 10 hours a week. That's a whole day, you know, that he could have been focusing on something. So generating revenue, creating value. Now, the two strategies then are acquisition strategy. How do I acquire clients? And then how do I retain clients? Now, many customers have an acquisition strategy, but I'm telling you, 90% of the people I've worked with have no retention strategy. How do we keep them? So if you think about what is my priority as a business owner and entrepreneur, my priority is create value and generate revenue. That's it.
Oh,
everything else you delegate.
I think I would be perfect with for somebody who knows how to attain new clients, and I would know how to keep them. So that's always been my problem. The reverse in that sense. So we have about 60-70% returning clients because of the good service, but it's just that we always need new clients because it's that type of service. So it's not
That's the sales side. And if I might, just one other thing, because I get ideas. You know, pet peeves and such. You know, you haven't asked me, but I get asked a lot, what's the one trait an entrepreneur needs? And I will always say, you need to learn how to sell.
Yep.
I don't care what you think about it. If you're going to be an entrepreneur, shut up and learn how to sell.
Yep.
Because you're going to be selling all the time. You're going to be selling your wife on letting you keep doing the thing.
Yeah, exactly.
You're going to have to sell bankers. You're going to have to sell investors. You're going to have to sell your kids on why daddy's gone so much. You're going to have to sell employees. You're going to have to sell everybody. So get it out of your head that that's not you. Because if you don't believe that you're in sales or understand it, you're not going to make it. So learn it somehow, some way.
That's a fantastic point. That's a fantastic point. And sales is really one trait that an entrepreneur needs. And another is communication, which goes with that. So introverts are very poor entrepreneurs in that sense. But you can always hire people to do the jobs that you can't. So if you're not a good salesperson, you can hire a salesperson. If you are not a good CEO, you can hire a CEO to be the face of your company, and you can go do the product yourself, right? So,
well, that's what I always did.
Yeah.
On a few of the startups I was a part of, one of the first people we hired was a CEO because I hated sitting behind a desk. I hated, you know, I was always the idea marketing sales guy, you know. So if I had a group of people starting a business, I said, look, just let me run with the sales and the strategy and all of that stuff. I don't want to deal with investors. I don't want to sit behind the desk all day long. I don't want to do that, you know, but that's part of, but again, if you're just building something up, bootstrap by yourself, I mean, you've got to figure this stuff out. And one of the things you have to do is learn how to sell.
Yep.
Because again, I mean, it just still kills me how people go sales. Well, you know, I go, well, I'll see you in the unemployment line.
You know? Exactly. Exactly. I want to touch on two more points and one really quickly. So you said everybody needs to learn to prioritize based on your consequences. So what is your take on prioritizing the tasks versus prioritizing the consequences? Because even when prioritizing the tasks, so what has the biggest consequence? There are different consequences sometimes. So one consequence is losing money. The another consequence is having issues with the family. A third consequence is something else in HR, whatever it is. So how do you prioritize consequences so you can find out what is the biggest one?
That's an interesting question. I don't know if I've ever been asked that.
Oh, cool. So it's a first question.
Yeah, no, I think the key there is understanding what, you know, making the list. I go back to this. Make a list, just like I always say, and you heard me say, make a list of everything you think you need to do. Mm-hmm. Then there's a prioritization process that I showed you. It's something that's been around for a long time. Brian Tracy wrote a book about it, Eat That Frog, and then I've taken elements and built onto it. But the whole idea from Eat That Frog is finding the frog, and the frog is the most, not necessarily the biggest problem, but the most
important thing.
The most important thing you could that you have here. And then he always, Mark Twain, the American philosopher, actually coined the phrase, it says, if you eat a frog the first thing in the morning, then the rest of your day can't be all that bad. You know, if you I'll paraphrase by saying, if you eat the biggest, ugliest, nastiest frog first thing in the morning, then the rest of the day is going to be great. So, make your list and then go through that list with this prioritization process. An A task is one, and put an A, B, C, D, E beside everything on your list. But the A is look, I have to do this. I must do it. That the consequences are so high that if I don't do it, something's going to happen. Like if you don't pay your mortgage to the bank, the bank's going to come and take your house, right?
Yep.
So if I get up in the morning and I have to go to a meeting or go to the bank and pay my mortgage, I'm probably going to go pay the mortgage, then go to the meeting, you know, because the highest prior consequence over here is I'm going to lose my house if I screw around any longer. So the key is to make that list and put your A's, then your B's, which is things you'd like to do, C's, things you should do if you had the time for it, D's is delegate, E is eliminate. So if you go just stick with your A, B's, and C's, then what that does, to briefly answer your question, is that that gives you a list of A's here that have, that you believe this group has the highest consequence. Then what I do is I say, okay, of this list, and there might be two, there might be, I have seven today. So there might be two, there might be seven. So then I look at that list and then I go, okay, of these seven things, if I don't do which one, if I don't do any of it, which is the one on this list that if I don't do it, it's going to hurt. It's going to hurt the most. Now you're prioritizing the prioritized list.
Yeah.
And you're saying, and it could be, and that's why I say don't separate family with business and all that. It has to be together. If you see one of the issues is you've got to make the soccer game, the football game with your daughter.
Yeah, it's an A.
Well,
yeah.
I'd make sure I move everything around so I'm absolutely there because it's her birthday too.
Yeah.
So I'm going to move everything around to make sure I'm there. That's my A priority, A1, is to make that football game.
And so that's the answer to the question, basically to have everything on the list, as you said in the very beginning. So work-life meshed with prioritizing the list. It's not all about business. It's your life. So you need to do a list on your whole day.
It's your life together. So again, prioritize a list and then prioritize the prioritize list.
Yeah.
You know, now it sounds like a lot, but I can do this in under 8 minutes at night because I just plug in stuff and I know the prioritization thing. But, you know, you get up like this was my priority A this morning. It's high priority. We've got appointments set for it. It's very important for me to talk to your audience and help somebody out there is the reason you're doing this, you know, and it's really important. So that's my A1 to do this. Now, as soon as we're done today, I'm going to get in my car and drive to my other office. And in between that drive, which is 10 minutes, I'm going to make a really important phone call because I know I can do it in that gap.
Yeah.
And then I have a 9:30 appointment there, and that's going to take an hour. Now, it sounds crazy, but by doing that, I give myself my life back.
Exactly.
I know people, I know financial planners, real estate people that have worked 85 hours a week for 20 years because they never prioritize anything. They just try to get everything done. So the question comes back, we'll bring it back full circle. What can I do and only I do if done well will move me forward? Is there, if someone else can do that as well as I can at a lower price, they're going to do it. And then what is the highest priority to meet my personal and my business goals together? What's the most important thing I should be doing now? I talked to a pretty famous Hall of Fame business and personal development gentleman, and he travels all over Asia and such. And I asked him one time, how many emails do you have when you come home? And he goes, I average 6,000. And I said, what do you do with those? And he goes, well, I hit delete. And I go, really? How could you do that? He goes, well, I've got people watching for contracts, but almost all of those are B, A, B, C, D. He says, almost all are B. He says, if they want me bad enough, they'll call back.
Yeah.
See, that's a mentality versus, oh, I got to read them all. And we've all done that, right? Oh, I got to check them all. You don't have to check them all. Here's what I do, Jack. I get up in the morning. I always say never read email in the morning. There's a book about that. Because when you do, you always grab one and go, oh, and now you're out of control. You're reacting to someone else's needs. You know, but what I do is I go in and open it up and I delete everything I know I don't want to read. It's not important. So the only thing that's left is three or four important emails, which I will check then at a time that I have set to check my emails.
Now, this is I feel so privileged that you read my email after the summit because we don't know each other.
So yeah.
It's a pure luck, you know, that I remained in the inbox.
You asked a great question in the seminar. So for all listeners, he's good at asking questions.
Cool. So one last thing that I wanted to touch on is that, okay, so we made a list, we're organized, we're intended to be productive. How do we not stray from the path of productivity in the sense of, checking the emails every 5 minutes, telephone ringing, somebody coming up to us and asking us questions, going to a meeting and then, you know, one thing leading to another. So how do you kind of control the environment to keep on the task at point. So any tips on productivity on that?
Yeah, two things I can think of right now. One is the simple word of discipline. I talk a lot about this. You've got to be really, really disciplined to protect your time. Because there's going to be people in the office and things that you allow. I call them yappers. There's going to be yappers that'll walk in and go, "Hey, Jack, what are you doing?" "Well, I'm working." "What are you doing?" "Well, did you see the game last night?" They say that 50% of our productivity is stolen by yappers, people who are just going around stealing time. I call them time vampires. They're just sucking the life out of you, so you've got to watch it. You've got to be disciplined not to allow that. The great investor Warren Buffett said one time that great managers and entrepreneurs have mastered the word no. It doesn't mean that you're being tough or it does mean you're being tough, but it doesn't mean you're mean. It just said it's easy. You've got to discipline yourself to say, no, not right now. I'm busy. There's a discipline to focus. Okay. And that's really, really key. And, and there's a couple other things that you can do, but the hard part about it is being disciplined to say, no, I can't talk right now. Focusing on it. One of the lines that I use, one of the techniques I use is I tell folks I work with, I said, here's what you do. You set up your watch or you set up a timer on your phone or something that every 20 minutes it goes off. And it's Pavlovian. Mm-hmm. You set that to go off and every 20 minutes you want to remind yourself when that buzzes, you want to look at a chart. Well, I used to have a chart and it says, is what I'm doing right now the most important thing I could possibly be doing? And if it isn't, just stop and get back to focus.
I had friends who had put up a sign, "Are you working?" So, just look at the sign. Are you working? No.
Oh. Yeah. Well, it's a fact of asking yourself, is what I'm doing the most important thing I could possibly be doing to move my goals forward? And if it's not, you have to stop. You have to stop and you have to focus and you have to go, okay, I need to get back to it. Because, we don't have time today, but I'd love to tell you about the most fascinating research of what's happening in our world, wherever you're at. It's called interruption addiction. Mm-hmm. And it says that we get interrupted so much that we've just given into it. So we become addicted to the interruption. Interruption might be...
Yeah, it's a notification. It's everybody's living on mobile phones. Yeah.
Your cell phone buzzing, your pop-ups coming down here while we're talking. And after a certain point, we become... Have you ever saw a group of people sitting at a table and somebody's phone buzzes and everybody goes...
Yeah. Is that mine? Is that yours? Is that,
Anytime that buzzes, the brain, we're training ourselves to get... Your brain actually reacts by a squirt of dopamine. It's the same kind of stuff.
And you actually get jealous if it's not yours.
Yeah. There you go.
Somebody else is calling you. What is calling me?
You saw some of the statistics. I mean, the statistics are crazy on how many, and one of them is the average millennial, let's say, checks their phone 18 times an hour because of an interruption addiction. Now, the other statistic that Harvard University came up with was that once an addiction happens, it takes 17 minutes for the person to get back on focus. So if you're interrupted 18 times and it takes 17 minutes to get back on focus, you multiply those two, it means you're never back on focus. If you're going to be an entrepreneur, you will not exist if you allow that to happen.
Yeah. And it's a good one good thing to do from my experience for the listeners is block out your time if you have anything to do. So if you have that blog to write, if you want to do calls, if you want to check emails, block out the time in the calendar. You actually put a meeting for yourself in the calendar. So at 9, I'm going to do my emails and I'm going to do it at 9, at noon and at 5, or I'm going to write at post, at 2 from 2 to 4. And that's it. You take that time. I know I'm always postponing the thing that, you know, bothers me the most, in the sense that, oh, I'm not inspired today, right now, so let me check that post. Let me do the chairs in the event room and everything else, that I'm not, you know, just sitting and doing content. And that's that's wrong.
If you'd like, I could send you a copy of what we call a time block calendar, that you can go in. It's like an Excel spreadsheet that you can put color codes on different days, and it's broken out in 15-minute increments. And I use that a lot for set meetings. Mm-hmm. When I was one of the busiest coaches in the world, I mean, I used this thing and blocked out. People couldn't figure out how I could still do 5 prospect interviews every week, because I was complete. Well, I blocked out every day between 11:30 and 1:30 that I would take somebody to lunch.
Yeah.
And if I couldn't find somebody to take to lunch, I took my wife. But I was still doing 5 presentations, 5 prospect presentations every week. And a lot of people couldn't do, you know, 2. One.
Yeah, one.
You know, and the reason it was is I blocked it out. I didn't schedule anything around it. And so I do the same for checking emails and those kind of things. Just keep my day organized. I'd be glad to share that with you and your listeners.
Fantastic. So please send that over, and I'll link it in the description of the podcast and on YouTube. So Danny, we're closely coming to the end of the show. I want to tell you that it's been a fantastic ride, and I'm so glad that you you know, you are a guest on my podcast. For the end, what would you recommend? What would be your recommendation for the listeners of the Backwater Entrepreneurs? So Backwater, in that sense, you know, I explained it in the first episode, is in my opinion, if you're targeting the global marketplace, no matter where you are. So you're in the US, I'm in Europe. If you're in China, if you're in Africa, you're in some kind of a backwater considered for the global marketplace. So for anybody out there doing online business, your recommendation and one thing that you would leave them with.
Understand everybody has a different definition of this, but one of the things that if I was your coach, Jack, I would ask you, and I would look you right in the eye, and I'd sit here until you answered me. And then we'd sit here for a month if we had to understand the definition. But most people have never sat down and defined the definition of success for themselves. What does success look like? Is it this? Is it this amount of money? Or is I've had people say, well, it's this amount of money. I've had people say, well, it's the ability to take a vacation. I know guys that are highly successful with money, but they haven't been on a vacation in 7 or 8 years with their family. So what does success mean to you? And what are you willing to do to get that?
Is that a question?
No, that's just, I'm saying that
for everybody.
How do you define success? Most people, because again, my definition of wealth, for instance, is much different than my family's definition of wealth on the farm.
Yeah.
I'm farm family. You know, I define wealth much differently. I define success much differently than other people. So understand what your definition of success is, because that will then dictate. I had a guy one time came to me and says, well, I want to be as successful as you. And I go, well, here's what I do. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And he goes, I don't know whether I want to work that hard.
I know exactly the people you're talking about.
You know, so understand what you want out of it before you do it. And then be very clear, and then only do the most important things. Again, we're either creating value or we're generating revenue. And if you have any questions on that, I'll be glad to come back on your show, Jack, and we can answer them for your listeners. But I'm telling you, if you come into my office, there's 5 dry erase boards, and all 5 of them, at the top of them, say clarity. I will tell you that most businesses who fail and most businesses who make it either have an abundance of clarity or a lack of clarity. And I say clarity, I'm telling you, 90% of a lot of the people I work with can't tell you truly exactly who their target audience is. They can guess at it, but most of them have no idea. It's what they were told it should be. It's what they read somewhere, but they don't know. So get the clarity in your business and then work really hard. Understand what you're getting into. And the line I always use is, I'm pretty pointed about it. I said, then shut up. You're in control. I don't care how bad the economy is or anything. There's always one person in every market, in every niche, that's just winning every day. And the reason they are is that they're not going to listen to anybody else. I'll close with this story. Sam Walton is a gentleman who founded the Walmart stores. He's one of the richest men in the world. And Sam was once asked, in the worst economy the United States had ever had, said, Sam, how's this terrible economy affected Walmart? He goes, it hasn't. And the reporter said, well, how could it not? He goes, we chose not to participate. So I'm telling you, no matter what the condition is, no matter where you're at in the world, no matter what you're up against, if you believe you're going to be the best, you're going to be the number one, you're going to have the best product, you're going to be the most successful. If you believe that, you've got a better chance of making it than going, well, we'll give it a try. You know, you don't have to participate in the negative thinking. So I just urge everybody to work really hard. Be very clear. Don't be selfish with your time, and understand what you're getting into. And, you know, it can be the most painful thing you've ever done, or it can be the most wonderful thing you've ever done. But you choose that.
And that's a fantastic closing line from Dan. Dan, thank you very much for being on the show, Backwater Entrepreneur. We're very proud to have you, and we would be very glad to have you again anytime you have the time for us. So for everybody out there, this has been a special Backwater Entrepreneur with our guest, Danny Creed, a business coach. And we bid you farewell until the next episode.